Wolf Brother by Michelle Paver is read by Ian McKellen and brought to you by audible.co.uk.
Chapter 29. Tomorrow, Torak and Wolf would set out into the bear-haunted forest, and Torak had no idea what he was going to do. Even if they reached the mountain, what next? Should he simply leave the Nanwak on the ground? Ask the World Spirit to destroy the bear? Try to fight it on his own? "Do you want new boots, or do we mend yours?" snapped Oslak's mate, who was measuring him for winter clothes. "What?" he said. "Boots," repeated the woman. She had tired eyes and river clay markings on her cheeks, and she was furious with him. He didn't know why. He said, "I'm used to my boots. Could you maybe mend them?" she snorted. "I think I can manage that." "Thank you," Torak said humbly. He glanced at Wolf, who was cowering in the corner with his ears back. Oslak's mate snatched a length of sinew and spun Torak round to measure his shoulders. "Oh, it'll fit all right," she muttered. "Well, sit down." Torak sat and watched her tying knots to mark the measurements. Her eyes were moist and she was blinking rapidly. She caught him looking. "What are you staring at?"
"Nothing," he replied.
"Should I take off my clothes?" "Not unless you want to freeze. You'll have the new things by dawn. Now, give me the boots." He did, and she eyed them as if they were a pair of rotting salmon. "More holes than a fishing net," she said. It was a relief when she bustled out of the shelter. She hadn't been gone long when Wren came in. Wolf padded over and licked her fingers. She scratched him behind the ears. Torak wanted to thank her for standing up for him, but he wasn't sure how to start. The silence lengthened. "How do you get on with Vedna?" Wren said abruptly.
"Vedna?
Oh, Oslak's mate. I don't think she likes me."
"It's not that. It's your new clothes. She was making them for her son. Now she's got to finish them for you."
"Her son? Killed by the bear."
"Oh, poor Vedna," he thought. "Poor Oslak. And that explained the river clay. It must be the raven way of mourning."
The bruise on Wren's cheek had turned purple. He asked if it hurt. She shook her head. He guessed that she was ashamed of what her brother had done.
"What about Finn Kedin?" he said. "How bad is his leg?"
"Bad. Bone deep. But no sign of the blackening sickness."
"Well, that's good."
He hesitated.
"Was he very angry with you?"
"Yes, but that's not why I'm here."
"So, why are you here?"
"Tomorrow. I'm coming with you."
Torak bit his lip. "I think it has to be just me and Wolf."
She glared at him.
"Why?"
"I don't know. I just do."
"That's stupid."
"Maybe, but that's how it is."
"You sound like Finn Kedin."
"That's another reason. He'd never allow it."
"Since when did I let that stop me?"
He grinned. She didn't grin back. Looking thunderous, she moved to the fire at the entrance to the shelter.
"You're to eat night meal with him," she said. "It's an honour, in case you didn't know."
Torak swallowed. He was scared of Finn Kedin, but in a strange way he also wanted his approval. Eating night meal with him sounded unnerving.
"Will you be there too?" he asked.
"No."
"Oh."
Another silence. Then she relented.
"If you like, I'll keep Wolf with me. Best not to leave him alone with the dogs."
"Thanks." She nodded. Then she saw his bare feet.
"I'll see if I can find you a pair of boots."
Sometime later, Torak made his way to Finn Kedin's shelter, stumbling in his borrowed boots, which were much too big. He found the raven leader in heated talk with Seon, but they stopped when he came in. Seon looked fierce. Finn Kedin's face gave nothing away. Torak sat cross-legged on a reindeer skin. He couldn't see any food, but people were busy at cooking skins by the long fire. He wondered how soon they would eat, and what he was doing here.
"I've told you what I think," said Seon.
"So you have," Finn Kedin said evenly. They made no attempt to include Torak, which left him free to study Finkeddin's shelter. It was no grander than the others, and from the roof post hung the usual hunter's gear, but the string of the great yew bow was broken, and the white reindeer hide parka was spattered with dried blood. Stark reminders that the raven leader had faced the bear and survived. Suddenly, Torak noticed a man watching him from the shadows. He had short brown hair and dark, wizened features. "This is Krokoslik," said Finkeddin, "of the Mountain Hare clan." The man put both fists over his heart and bowed his head. Torak did the same. "Krokoslik knows these parts better than anyone," said Finkeddin. "Talk to him before you set out. If nothing else, he'll give you a few hints on surviving the mountains. I wasn't impressed by the state you were in when we caught you. No winter clothes, one water skin, and no food. Your father taught you better than that." Torak caught his breath. "So you did know him?" Seon bristled, but Finkeddin quelled her with a glance. "Yes," he said, "I knew him. There was a time when he was my best friend." Angrily, Seon turned away. Torak felt himself getting angry too. "If you were his best friend, why did you sentence me to death? Why did you let me fight, Horde? Why did you keep me tied up while the clan meet decided whether to sacrifice me?" "To see what you were made of," Finkeddin said calmly. "You're no good to anyone if you can't use your wits." He paused. "If you remember, I didn't keep you under close guard. I even let you have the wolf cub with you." Torak thought about that. "You mean you were testing me?" Finkeddin did not reply. Two men came over from the main fire carrying four steaming birchwood bowls. "Eat," said Krokoslik, handing one to Torak. Finkeddin tossed over a horn spoon, and for a while Torak forgot about everything as he dug in hungrily. It was a thin broth made from boiled elk hooves and a few slivers of dried deer heart, bulked up with rowan berries and the tough, tasteless tree mushroom that the clans call Auroch's ears. With it they had a single flat cake of roasted acorn meal, very bitter, but not too bad once it was broken up and mashed into the broth. "I'm sorry we can't do better," said Finkeddin. "But prey is scarce." It was the only reference he made to the bear. Torak was too hungry to care. Only when he'd licked his bowl did he notice that Finkeddin and Seon had hardly touched theirs. Seon took them back to the cooking skin, then returned to her place. Krokoslik hung his spoon on his belt and went to kneel by the small fire at the entrance to the shelter, where he murmured a brief prayer of thanks. Torak had never seen anyone like him. He wore a bulky robe of brown reindeer hide that hung all the way to his calves, and a broad belt of red buckskin. His clan skin was a mantle of hair fur over the shoulders, dyed a fiery red, and his clan tattoo was a red zigzag band across the forehead. On his breast hung a finger-long shard of smoky rock crystal. He saw Torak looking at it and smiled. "Smoke is the breath of the fire spirit. Mountain clans worship fire above all else." Torak remembered the comfort the fire had given him and Wren in the snow cave. "I can understand that," he said. Krokoslik's smile broadened. With night meal over, Finkeddin asked the others to leave so that he could speak to Torak alone. Krokoslik stood up and bowed. Seon gave an angry hiss and swept from the shelter. Torak wondered what was coming next. "Seon," said Finkeddin, "doesn't think you should be told any more. She thinks it would distract you tomorrow." "Any more about what?" asked Torak. "About what you want to know." Torak considered that. "I want to know everything." "Not possible. Try again." Torak picked at a tear in the knee of his leggings. "Why me? Why am I the listener?" Finkeddin stroked his beard. "That is a long story." "Is it because of my father? Because he was the wolf mage, the enemy of the crippled wanderer who made the bear?"
That is part of it. But who was he? Why were they enemies? Far never even mentioned him.
With a stick, the raven leader stirred the fire, and Torak saw the lines of pain deepen on either side of his mouth. Without turning his head, Finkeddin said, "Did your father ever mention the soul-eaters?" Torak was puzzled. "No, I've never heard of them."
"Then you must be the only one in the forest who hasn't." Finkeddin fell silent, the firelight etching his face with shadow.
"The soul-eaters," he went on, "were seven mages, each from a different clan. In the beginning, they were not evil. They helped their clans. Each had his own particular skill. One was subtle as a snake, always delving into the lore of herbs and potions. One was strong as an oak. He wished to know the minds of trees. Another had thoughts that flew swifter than a bat. She loved to enchant small creatures to do her bidding. One was proud and far-seeking, fascinated by demons, always trying to control them. They say that another could summon the dead." Again he stirred the fire. When he did not continue, Torak mustered his courage. "That's only five. You said there were seven." Finkeddin ignored him. "Many winters ago, they banded together in secret. At first they called themselves the healers, deceived themselves into believing that they wished only to do good, to cure sickness, guard against demons." His mouth twisted contemptuously. "Soon they drifted into evil, warped by their hunger for power." Torak's fingers tightened on his knee. "Why were they called soul-eaters?" he asked, scarcely moving his lips. "Did they really eat souls?"
"Who knows? People were frightened, and when people are frightened, rumor becomes truth."
His face became distant as he remembered.
"Above all things, the soul-eaters wanted power. That's what they lived for. To rule the forest, to force everyone in it to do their bidding. Then, 13 winters ago, something happened that shattered their power."
"What?" whispered Torak. "What happened?"
Finkeddin sighed.
"All you need to know is that there was a great fire, and the soul-eaters were scattered. Some were badly wounded, all went into hiding. We thought the threat had gone forever. We were wrong."
He snapped the stick in two and threw it on the fire. "The man you called the crippled wanderer, the man who created the bear, he was one of them."
"A soul-eater?"
"I knew as soon as Hord told me about him. Only a soul-eater could have trapped so great a demon."
He met Torak's eyes. "Your father was his enemy. He was the sworn enemy of all the soul-eaters." Torak couldn't look away from the intense blue gaze.
"He never told me anything."
"He had reasons. Your father," he said, "your father did many wrong things in his life. But he did all he could to stop the soul-eaters. That's why they killed him. It's also why he brought you up apart, so that they'd never know you even existed."
Torak stared at him. "Me? Why?"
Finkeddin wasn't listening. Once again he was watching the flames.
"It doesn't seem possible," he murmured. "Nobody ever suspected there was a son. Not even me."
"But Saeon knew. Far told her, five summers ago at the clan meet by the sea. Didn't she?"
"No," said Finkeddin. "She never told me."
"I don't understand," said Torak. "Why couldn't the soul-eaters know about me? What's wrong with me?"
Finkeddin studied his face.
"Nothing. They mustn't know about you because..."
He shook his head as if there was too much to tell.
"Because one day you might be able to stop them."
Torak was aghast. "Me? How?"
"I don't know. I only know that if they find out about you, they'll come after you. Once more his eyes held Torax. This is what Seon didn't want you to know, and it's what I believe you must know. If you live, if you succeed in destroying the bear, it won't be the end. The Soul Eaters will find out who did it. They'll know you exist. Sooner or later, they'll come after you. An ember cracked. Torak jumped. You mean, even if I survive tomorrow, I'll be running all my life? I didn't say that. You can run, or you can fight. There's always a choice. Torak looked up at the blood-spattered Parker. Hord was right. This was a fight for men, not for boys. Why did Farr never tell me anything, he said. Your father knew what he was doing, said Fincedin. He did some bad things, some things for which I'll never forgive him. But with you, I think he did the right thing. Torak couldn't speak. Ask yourself this, Torak. Why does the prophecy speak of the listener? Why not the talker or the seer? Torak shook his head. Because the most important quality in a hunter is to be a listener. To listen to what the wind and the trees are telling you. To listen to what other hunters and prey are saying about the forest. That's the gift your father gave you. He didn't teach you magecraft or the story of the clans. He taught you to hunt, to use your wits. He paused. If you are to succeed tomorrow, that's how you'll do it. By using your wits. It was after middle night, but still Torak sat by the long fire in the clearing, staring at the looming blackness of the high mountains. He was alone. Wolf had gone off on his nightly wanderings, and the only signs of life in the camp were the silent ravens guarding the defences and the rumble of snores from Oslak's shelter. Torak longed to waken Wren and tell her everything, but he didn't know where she was sleeping. Besides, he wasn't sure that he could bring himself to tell her about Farr, about the bad things Fincedin said he had done. If you survive, it won't be the end. The Soul Eaters will come after you. You can run or you can fight. There's always a choice. Terrible images whirled in his head like a snowstorm. The bear's murderous eyes, the Soul Eaters, like half-glimpsed shadows in a bad dream, Farr's face as he lay dying. To chase them away, he stood up and began to pace. He forced himself to think. He had no idea what he was going to do tomorrow, but he knew that Fincedin was right. If he was to stand a chance against the bear, it would be by using his wits. The world spirit would only help him. If he tried to help himself. Once again, he ran through the lines of the prophecy. The listener fights with air and speaks with silence. The listener fights with air. The glimmerings of an idea began to nag at him. Chapter 30. Torak's fingers were shaking so much that he couldn't get the stopper off his medicine horn. Why had he left this to the last moment? Now Wolf was padding restlessly up and down outside the shelter, and the ravens were waiting to see him off, and he still couldn't get the stopper off the... "Want some help?" said Wren from the doorway. Her face was pale, her eyes shadowed. Torak passed her the medicine horn, and she yanked out the black oak stopper with her teeth. "What's this for?" she asked, handing it back. "Death marks," he said, not looking at her. She gasped. "Like the man on the ice river," he nodded. "But he knew he was going to die. You might survive." "You don't know that. I don't want to risk my souls getting separated. I don't want to risk becoming a demon." She stooped to stroke Wolf's ears. "You're right." Torak glanced past her into the clearing where the dark blue dawn was breaking. During the night, clouds had rolled down from the mountains, covering the forest in thick snow.
He wondered if that would help or hinder him. He tipped some red ochre onto his palm and spat on it, but his mouth was too dry and he couldn't make a paste. Wren leaned over and spat into his palm. Then she scooped up some snow, warmed it in her hands, and added that.
"Thanks," he muttered.
Shakily he daubed circles on his heels, breastbone, and forehead. As he finished the one on his forehead, he shut his eyes. The last time he'd done this had been for Far. Wolf pressed against him, rubbing his scent into the new leggings. He put his paw on Torek's forearm.
"I'm with you."
Torek bent and nosed his muzzle.
"I know."
"Here," said Wren, holding out the raven-skin pouch. "I added more wormwood and checked with Seon. The masking charm should work. The bear won't sense the Nanwak." Torek tied the pouch to his belt. Already he could feel the death mark stiffening on his skin. "You'd better take this, too." Wren was holding out a little bundle, wrapped in birch bast. "What is it?" She looked startled. "What do you ask for?" "What I sat up most of the night making." He was appalled. He'd almost forgotten. If he'd left without it, what would have become of his plan? "I've put in some purifying herbs as well," said Wren.
"Why?"
"Well, if you kill the bear, you'll be unclean. I mean, it's still a bear, still another hunter, even if there is a demon inside. You'll need to purify yourself." How like Wren to think ahead. How reassuring that she thought he had a chance. Wolf gave an impatient whine, and Torak took a deep breath. Time to go. As they started across the clearing, Torak remembered the medicine horn left behind in the shelter and ran back for it. As he came out, opening his medicine pouch with trembling fingers, the horn slipped from his grasp. It was Finn Kedin who picked it up. The raven leader was on crutches. As he studied the medicine horn in his hand, the blood drained from his face.
"This was your mother's," he said.
Torek blinked.
"How did you know?"
Finn Kedin was silent. He handed it back.
"Don't ever lose it."
Torak stowed the horn in his pouch. That seemed an odd thing to say, given where he was headed. As he was turning to go, Finn Kedin called him back.
"Torak!"
"Yes?"
"If you survive, there's a place for you here with us, if you want it."
Torak was too surprised to speak. By the time he'd recovered, the raven leader was moving away, his face as unyielding as ever. The high mountains were rimmed with gold as Torek crunched through the snow towards the ravens. Oslak handed him his sleeping sack and water skin, Wren his axe, quiver, and bow. Surprisingly, Hord helped him on with his pack. He looked haggard, but seemed to have accepted that he wasn't the one who would be seeking the mountain. Seon made the sign of the hand over Torek, and then over Wolf.
"May the Guardian fly with you both."
"And run with you too," said Wren, trying to smile. Torak gave her a brief nod. He just wanted to be gone. The ravens watched in silence as he started through the snow, with Wolf trotting in his tracks. He did not look back. The forest was hushed, but as Wolf took the lead, he seemed eager and unafraid. Torak plodded behind him, his breath steaming. It was very cold, but thanks to Vetna, he didn't feel it. While he was sleeping, she'd left the new things in his shelter, an underjerkin of duckskin with the breast feathers soft against the skin, a hooded parka and leggings of warm winter reindeer hide, hair fur mittens on a thong threaded through the sleeves, and his old boots, deftly patched with tough reindeer shin hide, lined with pine marten fur, and with bands of dogfish skin sewn to the outer soles to improve the grip. Vedna had even unpicked his clan skin from his old jerkin and sewn it to the parka. The band of wolf fur was tattered and filthy, but very precious. It had been prepared by Far. Wolf swerved to investigate something, and Torek was instantly alert. A squirrel's tracks, tiny and hand-like. Torak followed the trail as it hopped along between snow-covered juniper bushes, then broke into long, startled leaps and disappeared up a pine tree. Torak threw back his hood and stared about him. The forest was utterly still. Whatever had frightened the squirrel had gone, but Torek was angry with himself. He should have spotted those tracks too. Stay alert. A jay followed them from tree to tree as they pushed on. The sun rose in a cloudless sky. Soon Torak was panting as he laboured knee-deep in dazzling new snow. He'd decided against snowshoes. They'd make walking easier but slow him down if he had to move fast. Wolf fared better as his narrow chest cut the snow like a canoe slicing water. By mid-morning, though, even he was tiring. The land was climbing steadily, as Krokoslik had said it would. "My grandfather once got close to the mountain," he'd explained when Torak had woken him in the night, "so close that he could feel it. From here you follow the stream north, and the land climbs till you're in the shadow of the high mountains. Around midday you reach a lightning-struck spruce at the mouth of a ravine. The ravine is steep, too steep to climb, but there's a trail that clings to its western side." "What kind of trail?" Torak had asked. "Who made it?" "Nobody knows. Just take it. That lightning tree, it has power to protect. It guards the trail from evil. Maybe it will protect you, too." "What then? Where do I go then?" Krokoslik had spread his hands. "You follow the trail. Somewhere at the end of the ravine lies the mountain." "How far?" "Nobody knows. My grandfather didn't get far before the spirit stopped him. The spirit always stops them. Maybe you will be different." "Maybe," thought Torak, trudging through the snow. If his plan worked, if the world spirit answered his plea, the bear would be destroyed and the forest would survive. If not, there would be no second chances for him or the forest. In front of him, Wolf raised his head and sniffed. His hackles were up. What had he sensed? A few paces on, Torak noticed that the snow had been brushed off the tips of the branches at about shoulder height. Then he found a juniper sapling with several twigs raggedly bitten off. "Red deer," he murmured. A jumble of tracks confirmed it. By the look of them, it was a single deer, probably a buck. They don't pick up their feet as high as hinds do, and Torak saw drag marks in the snow. But if it was only a deer, why were Wolf's hackles up? Torak looked round. He could feel the forest holding its breath. The bear tracks leapt out at him from the snow. He hadn't seen them before because they were so widely spaced, but now he made out the signs of the buck's panic. He leaped down the slope below, with the bear tracks racing after it. The length of stride was horrifying. Struggling for calm, Torak forced himself to study the trail. The bear had been going at a gallop, as the pattern of prints was reversed, with the man-shaped hind tracks in front of the broader front tracks. Each one was three times the size of his own head. "They're fresh," he thought, "but the edges are slightly rounding over, although in this sun that wouldn't take long." Wolf jumped over the tracks, keen to press on. Torak followed more slowly. Every bush and boulder took on bear form. As they toiled up the slope, Wolf became more and more excited, bounding ahead, then doubling back for Torak and urging him on with little grunt whines. Perhaps at last they were nearing the mountain. Perhaps that was why Wolf was eager rather than frightened. Torak wished he could share that eagerness, but all he could feel was the weight of the nanwak at his belt and the menace of the bear. A distant roar split the forest. The jay gave a squawk and flew away. Torak gripped the hilt of his knife so hard that it hurt. How close? Where was it? He couldn't tell. Wolf was waiting for him to catch up, hackles raised, but tail held high. His meaning was clear. Not yet. As Torak waded through the snow, he wondered what had happened to the bear's own souls. After all, as Wren had said, it was still a bear. Once it must have hunted salmon and browsed on berries and slumbered through the winter. Were its souls still inside its body? With the demon? Trapped? Terrified? He rounded a boulder, and there was the lightning-struck spruce.
His spirits quailed. Above him, the high mountain swept skywards, blindingly white. The ravine cut through them like a knife slash. On and on it wound into the mountains, its end lost in impenetrable cloud. A narrow trail clung to its western side, snaking up from where Torak stood. Who had made the trail? For what purpose? Who would dare set foot on it and venture into that haunted place? Suddenly the clouds at the end of the ravine parted, and Torak saw what lay beyond. Storm clouds writhed about its flanks. A deep, windless cold flowed from its summit. Unimaginably high, it pierced the sky, the mountain of the world spirit. Torak shut his eyes, but he could still feel the power of the spirit forcing him to his knees. He could feel its anger. The soul-eaters had conjured a demon from the other world. They had loosed a monster on the forest. They had broken the pact. Why should the spirit help the clans when some among them had been so wicked? Torak bowed his head. He couldn't go on. He didn't belong here. This was the haunt of spirits, not of men. When he opened his eyes, the mountain was gone, once more shrouded in clouds. Torak sat back on his heels. I can't do it, he thought. I can't go up there. Wolf sat in front of him, his tear-shaped eyes as pure as water. Yes, you can. I'm with you. Torak shook his head. Wolf gazed steadily back at him. Torak thought of Wren and Finkedin and the ravens and of all the other clans that he didn't even know about. He thought of the countless lives in the forest. He thought of Far, not Far as he lay dying in the wreck of their shelter, but Far as he had been just before the bear attacked, laughing at the joke Torak had made. Grief rose in his chest. He drew his knife from its sheath and slipped off his mitten to lay his hand on the cold blue slate. You can't stop now, he said out loud. You swore an oath to Far. He unslung his quiver and bow and laid them against the tree. Then he did the same with his pack, his sleeping sack, waterskin and axe. He wouldn't need them. Just his knife, the nanwak in the ravenskin pouch, and Wren's little birch-bast bundle in his medicine pouch. With a last glance at the forest, he followed Wolf up the trail.
The first three books in the Chronicles of Ancient Darkness series by Michelle Paver are available to download at audible.co.uk for the special multi-buy price of $14.99 until the end of August. If you enjoyed Wolf Brother, you'll want to join The Clan, the official worldwide fan site for all readers of the Chronicles of Ancient Darkness series. The Clan is where thousands of fans just like you meet for games and chat, role-playing, art competitions, writing contests and quizzes. Best of all, it's free. So go to www.torak.info. That's TORAK.INFO, and join the clan now.